It's Wednesday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We've got a special guest, former Steeler, Ryan Shazier, two-time Pro Bowler, is going to talk with us here in the show. We talk about how Steelers with him, and we also talk some Pitt football, and we got Penguins and playoffs talked all here in the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, talking all things Pittsburgh sports from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Reminder, you can download the show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of our daily content that comes out from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And also a reminder, our show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh with over 500 different available beers. We'll talk more on them later. I'm joined today by Ryan Shazier, former Steelers star linebacker here on the show. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. How you doing today?
How you doing, Chris? Thank you for having me.
Of course. Ryan, I wanted to lead off with a question about the state of the Steelers defense, but not in necessarily any specifics on the stats or anything, but about the leadership. If you go back over the past, in all my adult watching life of football, you go back to the 2000s when they had Casey Hampton and Troy Polamalu and James Ferrier and James Harrison, and then that carries into the 2010s where Harrison's still there, but then you come into the picture. Cam Hayward comes into the picture. And even today, Cam Hayward, Minkah Fitzpatrick, TJ Watt. There has been a steady transition in every era of the Steelers, especially in the Mike Tomlin era and even just before, of defensive leadership. How has that kind of developed over the years in your eyes as far as being something that's just always been a part of the Steelers organization?
The biggest thing that I noticed with the Steelers organization is the one saying that everybody knows that's a Pittsburgh fan or that's in the, from the city of Pittsburgh, is the standard is the standard. So from the 70s, the Steelers have always been known to have a hard-nosed defense, an aggressive defense, a defense that, you know, doesn't take anything from anybody. So I think the leaders understand that they have to continue to hold those values and continue to live through that. And that's why the team constantly has the leadership that it has and the defenses constantly stay at the level that they have, because they constantly bring in people that they feel have great leadership qualities. But then also the best players are also the best leaders. So I think that's a really big testament to just how, you know, Mr. Rooney, Coach Tomlin, Omar, and Kevin have built these teams. And I think that's why they continue to thrive like this. Like, even trading for a guy like Minkah, who has great leadership qualities, you know, getting TJ when, you know, TJ, you know, coming out of college, you know, how he's a hard worker, because everybody leads in a different way. Cam is just an amazing leader because he leads by example, but he also is a spoken leader, you know, and you know, TJ is more lead by example type. And then, you know, Minkah, you know, is spoken and lead by example. I think it's just a combination of your skill sets and what you can do, you know, and when they need to talk, kind of like Troy, when they need to talk, TJ is very similar, like, hey, when it's important enough, you know, they speak up and talk. So I think they definitely do a good job of just bringing in guys that they lead by example. But when they do speak, everybody, you know, be quiet so they can be heard.
I want to follow that up real quick. Who was the person that you felt helped you understand that leadership tone, that standard as far as defensive playmaking, but also defensive leadership when you joined the organization?
It was definitely a few different people. Obviously, Coach Tomlin, when it just the understanding of how to be a leader for the guys that you're around as a linebacker. The linebacker has to be somebody to set the front, somebody that puts other people in position. And he made me learn those things at a very, very early age. And that was something that I did a little bit in college, but I didn't have as big of a burden as in college as I did in NFL. But when you have a lot of responsibilities, it makes you grow up pretty fast. But then I would say Cam Hayward, because he's more lead by example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's somebody that you like, man, like, he's somebody that really, when he's doing something, he's not just telling you to do it. You see him doing it. But a guy that really helped me out, a few guys that really helped me out a lot, was a guy like Will Gay, a guy like Will mm-hmm. Allen. Those two guys were veteran guys. They were leaders in their own right, because both of them were very understanding of how to lead and explain it to guys in a different way, because unlike Will and both of them were at that point in their career, they weren't the most athletic anymore, but they were the most savvy. They understood the rules of the game, their experiences of the game. And that's how they were helping us win games. And it just showed me on the leadership side on how to watch film, how to take your job a lot more serious. And I took it serious, but just in a different way. And I feel like those are definitely people that helped me out.
When you first saw TJ Watt, when he came to camp in 2017 and he was, you know, learning the tricks of the trade, did you foresee him being this defensive player of the year type of guy? Every year he's just up there leading the NFL in sacks.
So the one thing about TJ when he first came, I remember one of my good friends who went to Wisconsin with him as well was like, man, TJ's going to come there and do an amazing job. He's going to be great. Watch. And I was like, man, are you sure? He's like, man, watch. Like, TJ's going to be a dog. And I was like, all right, cool. And when I first seen him, I was like, man, this is crazy, because the one thing about TJ that you really learn is that he's somebody that's going to work his tail off every single day. He's somebody that's not going to let anybody outwork him. He's going to hustle really for every play, and he's going to make every play count. He makes sure that he doesn't take anything for granted. And those guys that don't take anything for granted and let every single play count and put in the extra effort every single day, those are the ones that become great. So it's not, to me, it's not surprising that TJ is great. The thing is, and it's also not surprising that he's winning awards. The thing is, it's just crazy because you see it and then you actually, like, you knew, like, this guy had the talent, but now you actually seeing it come to fruition. And it's like, man, this guy is really the best player in the NFL on the defensive side of the ball. And it's like, man, like, we seen all the work he put in when he was younger, and now you're seeing all of it continue to flourish. And now I don't think there's a defensive player in the league that's better than him. I know Myles Garrett won the award, but it's just, in my opinion, I don't think there's a consistent defensive player in the league right now that's better than him.
You touched on Cam Hayward earlier. What did he mean to you as a leader then? And what do you see him – how crazy do you see him being a leader even now? He's in his mid-30s, still being a leader for this team.
I think, like I said, the same thing with Cam. He leads by example. So, I know I'm 31, going on 32. So, that means Cam's around 33. I mean, no, I'm tripping. Cam's around 34, 35.
Yes.
So, with me, it just – for somebody to lead by example at 34, 35 – and showing all these young bucks, hey, I'll still try my best to outrun you. I'm still trying my best to, you know, bully the guy in front of me. I'm not just saying, hey, you guys need to do this and just sitting on my tail. He's out there doing it as well. So he does a really good job of doing that. But Cam is somebody that truly cares about everybody. So he does a really good job of making you feel like you care. And so when he talks to you, you understand that he's talking from a place of care and instead of a place of fear or a place of, you know, disapproval. He talks to you because you understand this man is going to do the same for you that he acts from himself, and he asks you to do the same for him. So even to this day, me and Cam have a good relationship. I give him a call. He's always there for me, and the same thing for me. I'm always there for him. So I can't imagine Cam not being like that with everybody else. He's like that with everybody that he meets. And it's so funny because when you see Cam on the field, he seems like the meanest guy in the world. I know people used to tell me that too, but then when you meet him in person, you know, he's a great guy.
Absolutely. I want to ask you about Joey Porter, but not Joey Porter Sr., who was your coach, but his son, who was around the team as a kid. How crazy is it for you to see the kid who was around the team because his dad was a coach, and now he's a player, he's picking off Lamar Jackson, and he's a starter for the team that you played for?
To me, I think that's just amazing story to be around a team that much. It's kind of like a Larry Fitzgerald type of story. Just being, obviously he didn't go to the same type of team, but just being around a team, being a ball boy for the team, you know, running drills with the team, getting to practice against some of the starting receivers. To me, I think that's just an amazing story to be part of, because everybody dreams about having those opportunities. Everybody dreams about just being around the game in general. And Joey's been around it since he was a baby. And then the facility, you know, he's so used to it. The only thing that's new to the to him with the facility is that they constantly, you know, are upgrading it. But he knows exactly where everything is at. He knows exactly where the meeting rooms are at. And he understands what it's like to be part of that organization before he was already part of that organization. So I think that's why he came in and had the attitude that he had, because he's seen guys like Ike Taylor. He's seen guys like McFadden. He's seen guys like Joey Porter, like his dad. He's seen, you know, Will Gaze and, you know, Troy Polamalu's and Ryan Clark's. He's seen the how it was like football supposed to be played from when he was 5 years old all the way up to now. So he understands exactly what he needs to do and the work ethic he needs to have, but also the mindset he needs to have to show the guys in the league, like, hey, I'm the best. I believe I'm the best, and you're not going to do nothing to me. And I think that's one thing that I think he gets from his dad, but he also understood from, like, the old Steeler teams when he was part of them.
My last question to you, Ryan, if you think back to your time with the Steelers in your career, what was the highest hire, your favorite moment that you're like, that's the moment that, like, I was like, oh, like, that's my favorite thing to think back to in your time with the Steelers?
Man, it's really tough to really think about it, because I just feel like I had so many great moments on that team, you know, on the teams when I played with them. You know, my rookie year, just being able to learn from Troy Polamalu, hey, Ryan, you know, because I didn't feel like I was having the greatest rookie year. And, you know, Troy was like, hey, Ryan, think about this. My rookie year, I played so bad, I could have won Offensive Player of the Year. So I was like, he's like, because I gave up that many touchdowns. You know, so I was just like, oh, man, you know. And then my second year, when things were getting a little bit better, and then, you know, we beat Cincinnati and I ripped the ball out. You know, that was a really cool experience to win a playoff game, because the first year we lost the one to Justin Tucker with a 60-plus yard field goal. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, my third year, then I make the Pro Bowl. So then my fourth year, you know, it was the best season of my career. We're 13-3 that year. But, you know, I ended up getting hurt. But just to see how my team constantly had my back while I was injured, it just really showed me that the NFL is a job, but there are people that's going to be with you forever. And I still have a lot of those people in my lives to this day. So I can't just pick one thing. There's just so many things in my life that I still, you know, hold on to. And the city and people around the team still make me feel very thankful to be part of it.
That's amazing. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. He's Ryan Shazier, two-time Pro Bowl linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Read his book, Walking Miracle, still available on Amazon or anywhere that you buy books. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back sometime. We got to switch over to some Pitt football talk on the transfer portal. We'll get to that here next on the North Shore Drive Podcast. And this episode of the North Shore Drive Podcast is brought to you, as always, by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, it's right across the street from PNC Park. It's right on Federal Street, and it's the perfect place to go to for before Pirates games, after Pirates games, during Pirates games, and just to catch any sporting event. They have over 20 televisions, so you can watch whatever you want to see of the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, or anything in Major League Baseball. And they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap, and they're switching new ones in and out every single day so that you're always getting a new experience when you get there. They also have amazing food like steak on a stone, where your choice cut of steak is brought to you on a heated stone, and every single bite you press into the stone, and you choose how well done you want every single bite. Join us for our live draft shows that will be at Mike's Beer Bar April 25th and April 26th, covering the first and second and third rounds of the NFL draft. All there at Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you. We're back here in the North Shore Drive Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We switch over to talk about some Pitt football. We do that with my old buddy on the beat, Noah Hiles. Noah's been with me there. He's been through the thick and thin. He's right now, he's on the road getting ready to cover Pirates Mets. And we're going to acknowledge right now, we were recording this Tuesday or late morning. So, like, if there's more transfer portal news, we excuse us for not covering it. But there's been major transfer portal news. Fifth-year defensive end Deion Hayes left the team in the transfer portal Monday afternoon. And then Tuesday morning, Christian Veyer, the quarterback who started five games last year, hit the portal. That was more expected. But Solomon DeShields, another major defensive starter for this team, a redshirt senior off-ball linebacker, he hits the portal. And Noah, the story that I broke when I talked to Deion Hayes and I asked him, hey, what was the reason behind this? And he straight up said, he's like, hey, I don't think we can win right now. That seems like a bombshell to those who were hopeful that this could be the turnaround of the Pitt season, that a guy who's been a leader developed there for years said was willing to say something like that or even think something like that.
Yeah. You know, Chris, you and I had heard all offseason, especially throughout the spring, that the offense was getting dominated during spring practices. It's stuff you can't necessarily report because, you know, for one reason or another, you don't want to, like, upset anyone and upset some sources. But being now, I mean, the cat's out of the bag because that was Deion's reasoning. He said, I don't think they're going to be able to win this year. And he has 1 year of eligibility left. So he said, I'm not going to go out like this. And it turns out he's not the only person who felt that way. You know, you could make the argument that these guys left for money, but we both know for a fact that Deion Hayes was offered a lot of money from other programs this winter. Mm-hmm. And unlike Samuel Okunlola or DeAndre Jules or Bengali Kamara, he stuck around. He took what Alliance 412 offered him, as did DeShields and a couple of other guys. But I mean, there were a lot of Pitt players who had a bag thrown their way from other places and could have entered the portal and left and got a nice payday. But they stuck around, I think, because A, they love Pitt, and B, because they were under the impression that the offense was going to look better. That they said, you know what, if our defense can hold down the fort, we can bring in a modern offense and, you know, we'll get this thing moving back in the right direction. And I'm not saying to give up on Cade Bell and his
new stuff.
That's not what I'm saying here at all. But it's pretty clear that some of the guys did not like what they saw during spring ball. And I think I wasn't there to cover it, but from everything that I've read and from everyone that I've talked to, the offense does not look great right now. It looks like it needs a lot more work of, you know, just installing that playbook and getting everyone on the same page. And if you're a guy with only 1 year of eligibility left, that's tough. It's tough to know that it's like, I'm going to go through another season of the offense not being able to score. And why not go somewhere where you can go win probably more games and make more money? And it's a very harsh reality for Pitt football fans to accept right now.
Coming off, that's
from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, but coming off of, you know, back-to-back years where they were highly competitive, 20 wins in two seasons, and didn't have a 3-9 year. My question to you, Noah, and I'll bounce off of your answer here, is, you know, there's a lot of people that are wondering, is this a terrible sign for Pitt? Like, is this a unique situation to Pitt, or is this part of the current world of college football when it comes to the transfer portal? And seeing big names like this go after spring camp.
I mean, it is a part of the modern world of college football, but this doesn't happen to every team in college football. There are a lot of programs who are stealing the Deion Hayeses, the Jordan Addisons of the world. There are the haves and there are the have-nots, and Pitt is on the wrong side of that right now. So I'd say, yeah, it is. It is a bad sign. I mean, what does Pitt have to offer if you're a recruit right now? And again, I'm not trying to kick it while it's down, but
it clearly
lacks the NIL resources that other Power Five programs have, that its competition has in the ACC or teams that are seriously competing for a playoff spot. One of the biggest selling points for this program was Charlie Partridge. You come in here, he will make you an All-American. Well, he's no longer around. If you're an offensive player, what reason do you have to come to play at Pitt? There has been no consistency as far as staff, as far as scheme, as far as production, really, since Kenny Pickett left. I mean, yeah, like if you watch that 2022 team, there are a lot of reasons to come. And then even in 2022, if you're a running back, you're like, hey, yeah, that's attractive. But right now, with the turnover that they've had at the offensive coordinator position, where they're on 3 OCs in 4 years now, and the quarterback play has been bad, they haven't been able to score, that's not a good selling point. The entire coaching staff is pretty unproven, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So what do you have to offer? If you're a Whipple kid, sure, you can come and you can play for your hometown team, and that's great. But I mean, and then there are the other things, like, let's not kid ourselves. You know, I think the Panther Pitt does a good job, but Saturdays at Acrisure are not comparable to a lot of the good atmospheres
in college football.
So it's tough. I think Pitt did have a lot of selling points not long ago with Partridge, with the offensive season they had under Pickett, with, you know, their ability to churn guys out and make them pros. But, you know, a lot of teams churn guys out and create pros, especially day three guys, which are the majority of the pros throughout the Pat Narduzzi era. So it's tough. It's tough. And the only way this gets better, Chris, the only way is money. Because you can go find a three-star. You can go find your next Jordan Addison or Kenny Pickett and develop him. But guess what happens when you develop him? He's gone. He's gone. He's going to play for another team because you cannot keep paying him. You can't hope that everyone's going to be like Gavin Bartholomew and take a hometown discount to keep playing in the blue and gold. So the only thing that fixes this right now is money. Because even if you get good, the people who are responsible for that success, be it coaches or players, are going to get bought out. Unless if your bankroll becomes exponentially bigger and you can A, retain the good things that you do have, and B, continually add to it. And that's going to be a very tough challenge for Pitt.
Absolutely. And part of it is, you know, what you were talking about there is like, you know, part of, I think what would add to this is Pitt is only when you said on the other side of the have and the have nots, the one thing that Pitt had on its side the last few years was that it could have been in the haves very soon. When you looked at their ACC championship winning in the Sun Bowl, there was the feeling, I mean, Phil Dracovic, even though he didn't work out for Pitt, he talked about how like, hey, now's the time for Whipple players to come back home because Pitt is a winning program. And then when you have a 3-9 season, this is the fallout. When you don't have the money to be able to get in NIL and collectives to keep those players and to go out and get better players, the loyalty isn't going to feel as loyal, you know, with guys around. Now, and I'll say this too, like, it doesn't mean that everyone's going to be gone. Like, you know, like, I think Gavin Bartholomew will stay. You know, I do think that guys like him, you know, we'll see about like Kanate Mumfield and other playmakers. But you know, Pitt needs to be able to strike now. Like this needs to be a situation where I'm not saying they need to get back to a 9-win season and do that. I don't see that happening. But if they can get 6-7, you know, maybe 8 wins this year, something to just show, hey, 3-9 was a blip on the radar. It was just a bad little bump in the road. But now what we actually are is we still are going to be a competitive football program. But if it has another season where it's not bowl eligible, I think it furthers the path that it's on right now. And, you know, and that could put them in an even worse spot going into next season. And that's where I think Pat Narduzzi, the number one priority needs to be, you know, one, filling the holes that you're losing with these guys. Cause whereas, you know, Pitt's losing these guys, there's going to be other players in the portal that are also leaving their programs. But what can you sell to them to bring to yours? That's going to be the tough thing to ask there. And we'll see how Pitt addresses that in the coming months.
Yeah. And I think another thing that needs to change is just the overall view of NIL from the program. I just remember on signing day last winter where Pat said on record, you know, I don't like talking NIL with players. I actively avoid guys who bring that up when I'm talking with them. And his reasoning was, if you're talking about the money I can give you now as a freshman, what happens if you play well? You're going to be coming back to me the next year for more. Buddy, that's how it works now. It's a business. Like Deion said in his goodbye letter on X, it's a business. This game is a business. And in business, if you perform well at your job, you are well within your rights to ask for higher compensation, to be paid market value. And I know that's not going to sit well with a lot of college football fans who are listening or watching this, but that's the reality of the sport that you're playing in right now. And you can either get on board with that, or you can continue to oppose that. And if you oppose it, you know, and if you're recruiting guys who aren't money driven, you're going to have to search long and
pretty
far.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah. To find guys who have that mentality and are also really good at football, because there aren't a lot of them. Everyone, when you're looking around and you're seeing guys who you think you're better than making six figures at 19 years old, 20 years old, why in the world would you think that you're not worth that?
That's a great question, and that's the question that college football programs have to answer every single year. You know, like you said, I think another part of my reporting here was that, you know, a source told me that they made him one of the highest paid players for the NIL collective this year, and that still wasn't good enough to keep Deion Hayes. Does make you wonder what will be Pitt's chances moving forward. We'll keep you apprised of that at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's Noah Hiles. He's right now our Pirates beat writer. He was kind enough to join me to back on the Pitt beat for a second here with his expertise and all the great things. Noah, thank you so much for joining us. We switch over to the Penguins talk with Matt Wenzel right after this here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Chris Carter here with Matt Wenzel, one of our great Penguins writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The Penguins are out of the playoffs. They needed two teams to lose, and both of them won on Tuesday night. So now they enter their Wednesday night contest without much to play for. So, Matt, you wrote a great article that talked about the nine pressing questions for this offseason. And the one right at the top is, I think, one a lot of Penguins fans want to talk about. And it's about the future of head coach Mike Sullivan. Do you think he's back next year, or is this a year where they move on and try to find something new?
I would be shocked if they moved on from Mike Sullivan. We can obviously have a discussion there about whether they should or they shouldn't. But as far as the Penguins are concerned, they think he's a great coach. They want to keep him around. I know Kyle Dubas has reiterated that a bunch of times this season, whether it's in press conferences or his radio show. Even when the Penguins were at their lowest a few weeks ago, he said, yeah, he's still our guy. And if anything, this little run here at the end of the season just firmed up Mike Sullivan's footing. And, oh, yeah, his big contract extension doesn't even kick in until next season. Mm-hmm. So there's money involved, too. Not that Fenway Sports Groups wouldn't eat a little bit of money, but everything points to Mike Sullivan coming back. We'll see if there's a surprise, but I do wonder if there's going to be changes to Mike Sullivan's staff. You know, another one that fans are asking about is Todd Reirden. He has a pretty good track record as an assistant coach in his two stints in Pittsburgh, but two main areas he oversees is the defensive core and obviously the power play, and those were big disappointments this year. So we'll see what happens there.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's part of the thing that I always have is when I know I have a great coach like Mike Sullivan, who's won championships, who knows how to lead a hockey team and it's clearly not lost the locker room. I mean, that Penguins team was fighting down to the very end. Sure, they had some trip ups. You wrote about those. It's just like key parts of the season where if they pull this off or don't make these mistakes, they're probably playing for a playoff spot tonight. But I think that you look at it, Mike Sullivan isn't the biggest problem here at this point in time. This is a roster that you and I talked about before the season, saying like, this is going to have some very obvious challenges. And I think one of those things is the effort to keep the core together that they have of the older guys that have been part of those championship years. And a big question is, you know, what happens with Sidney Crosby and his contract situation? Do you have any insight as far as what they might try to do, whether it's an extension or anything else they might have up their sleeve?
Yeah, so he has 1 year left on his deal. In the NHL, you're eligible to extend heading into that final year. So I'm sure the Penguins are going to be there with a check. It might be a blank check. I don't know. I'm just waiting to get him signed on July 1st. I mean, they've publicly said they want to bring him back. Obviously, I mean, he just had an amazing season and is one of the greatest players in franchise history, greatest players in NHL history. He's given no indications he wants to leave. I know people in Canada are always speculating. Maybe he's going to come play for Winnipeg or Montreal. But so we'll see, though. I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of anxiety until they actually get it done. But, you know, Sid, even after the Jake Gensel trade is, you know, same old, same old. So I think it would be very, very surprising if anything happened there. In terms of what the deal could look like, I mean, they're probably looking for some sort of multi-year deal, obviously, for now. You know, he wants to play for a while, but we could see potentially after in a couple of years him go year by year, like Patrice Bergeron. Wow. You're good. Early morning here in Long Island, folks, yes. Like Patrice Bergeron did in Boston, where he just kind of went year to year, not to kind of tie up the Penguins cap wise and things like that, because there's penalties and things like that. But yeah, I think he's going to re-sign, and it's probably going to be a somewhat team friendly deal. I mean, he's left money on the table before because he wants to win cups. And I know he looks at other players around the league who take as much as they can get, saying, what are you doing? Don't you want to win? So, you know, we'll see. There's going to, like I said, there'll be a little anxiety until they get this done. But another thing, it would be a surprise if he was not here.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, Sidney Crosby is the face of the Penguins. He's the face of the franchise, you know, just like Lemieux was, but even more so now because he's been with them for so long. And you have to keep Crosby. But the big question, I think everyone, I think maybe the question that's more I guess, in question. The thing that, that everyone's really wondering is what will happen to the big pieces that have been around Crosby. You talk about Evgeny Malkin, you talk about Chris Letang, that core in the expense and how expensive it is to keep that together. It, do you see that core being broken up at all around Crosby to maybe find some of those pieces that he saves money in his contract to try to go find elsewhere?
No, I don't see it happening. There's a lot of factors in play. For one, Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin have full no trade clauses. Same thing for Brian Rust, who had a heck of a year. You know, Kyle Dubas has said he wants to build around, well, he said a core four players of Crosby, Chris Letang, Evgeny Malkin, and Erik Karlsson. You know, so I think there's also the question of what does ownership want? You know, are they putting this framework in place? I know Kyle was criticized by some fans when he said, hey, we're going to build around these older guys. But do we know he's not being told that? Wasn't told that when he took the job that, hey, those guys are staying here. So I expect all those guys to be back, except for maybe Erik Karlsson. Okay. That's going to be one to watch. He also has a full no trade clause. His contract in itself is essentially a no trade clause. I mean, it's three more years at $10 million. And while he had some highs this year, he didn't live up to that contract, you know, and he could block a trade. So we'll see. I don't know if the Penguins even have a desire to look into moving him despite some frustrating moments. But even if they did, it's kind of hard to find a match. I know there's been speculation he could go back to Ottawa. That's maybe the only spot I can think of that would be somewhat realistic. But again, he'd have to approve that. And by all accounts, he's happy here. Likes playing with the core players. And yeah, so we could have the same, we're talking about the same guys coming back. Now the question is what you do around those five, six guys. And then is it going to be any different? I don't know. That's the challenge. Like if you're bringing back all these guys and Mike Sullivan's coaching the same team, the same way to play the same way, you know, how are you going to make the eventual outcome much different than it has been the last couple of years?
That's the ultimate question right now, I guess. And I also want to just jump to the goalie question because, you know, Tristan Jarry came in this season as a starter, but it didn't seem like it ended that way. What do you see happening with the two goalie situation going into next season?
Yeah, as recently as 2 weeks ago when Alex Nedeljkovic started to play some games there, I still kind of thought the Penguins would run it back. They'd have to re-sign Nedeljkovic to do it. But it's fair to wonder if things have changed here over the last couple of weeks with Nedeljkovic playing 12 straight games. We'll see if he gets number 13 here on Long Island. But yeah, the fact that Mike Sullivan played Nedeljkovic in the must-win game on Monday, you know, Nedeljkovic got pulled Saturday against Boston. That was the opening that Mike Sullivan could use if he wanted to go back to Jarry, and he did not. So I think it's fair to wonder if, you know, we'll see if Jarry plays on Long Island here, but if that'll be his last game in a Penguins uniform. You know, he's got a few years left on his deal. His salary is around $5 million, maybe a little bit over. Not completely unmovable, and there's teams that could look at him and say he's a lot better than what we got. But yeah, it would be a surprising change, I guess, looking to where it was going into the year where the Penguins were like, hey, we're going to bring this guy back. Obviously, Kyle didn't sign him without Mike Sullivan being on board. Kyle Dubas went up to Tristan Jarry's offseason home in Canada to basically say, hey, like, I want to get to know you personally. Let's talk about how we're going to get this done. So, yeah, it'd be quite the turn here, but Nedeljkovic has been good. They've got a pretty good goalie prospect waiting in the wings and Joel Blomqvist. They would need to bring in somebody else, some other veteran, but if they moved on from Jarry. But yeah, this suddenly has become a real fascinating thing to watch here, what they do in goal.
My last question to you here before we get out, and this veers away from the questions you ask in your article. By the way, check that out at post-gazette.com. What is the biggest thing that has to happen to get the power play back in order, second to last in the league? Is it more about personnel or is it more about coaching changes as far as assistance under Mike Sullivan?
Yeah, that's a tough one to kind of pull apart there because they have some tremendous players, obviously starting with Sidney Crosby, but they do have flawed personnel. Like they don't really have a great net front presence. They didn't have somebody who could play in the bumper until they brought in Michael Bunting, and he's actually been really good there. So that could potentially fix that problem going into next year. So the personnel, you know, even though it starts studded, isn't quite ideal. You know, the coaching, I mean, this unit was way too predictable, you know, stationary, not urgent at times. And, you know, we could see it cost Todd Rudin his job, but I don't know how much of that is all on Todd Rudin. I mean, I think a lot of it's on the players, like guys who have done things a certain way for a long, long time. and refusing to do things differently, or maybe it's just reverting back into old habits. I'm looking at you, Evgeny Malkin. So, yeah, there's just a lot there, and we're going to see something change, I'm sure, whether it's personnel or where they, you know, maybe Mike Sullivan's forced to move on from Todd Reirden. But, yeah, it's, you know, the Penguins have been flummoxed all year because they brought in Erik Karlsson and thinking that he was going to supercharge the power play. And obviously, power play is arguably the biggest reason why this team is not making the playoffs, or some of the blown leads or their poor play in overtime. There's a few kind of common threads there, but
yeah,
I think most fans and probably the Penguins too would put the power play on top of the list.
Absolutely. We'll get into all of it at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's Matt Wentzel. Follow his coverage at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, postdeskgazette.com. Matt, thank you for joining us. Big thanks to Noah Hiles and Ryan Shazier for also being on the show. We're back Friday with more here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.